Welcome to The Machine, a podcast from Waterford Institute of Technology. My name is Rob O'Connor. I'm a lecturer in the Department of Computing and Mathematics. Today we are doing the second of our developer stories series. Today I'm speaking with Shane McCafferty of Rocket Ship Park Games. They have recently launched their brand new game, Love, a puzzle box full of stories. It's getting great reviews. Going to have a chat with Shane today from Canada. He's originally from Ireland, but he's based in Canada, not far outside Toronto. I'm going to talk to him about the development process, how he got to where he is today, and probably everything else in between. Shane, thanks very much for having a chat with me today. Very good to give up your time.
That's all right. It's a pleasure, Rob. You made me laugh there to start. The game is called A Puzzle Box Filled with Stories. And what you said is what I say every single time because I'm Irish. I say full of stories all the time too. And I always get in trouble and dirty looks from the other half of the company.
Do you know what's gas? I actually have this written down on a piece I've of done paper it every in front
time.
Of me.
Every time. I've done it in code. Like.
It's gas, isn't it? Yeah. Right, so come here. Love, a puzzle box filled with stories.
One, yeah.
It's out just about a month now. There's some wonderful reviews out there. We might go through some of that in a little while. Mm-hmm. We'll talk. It's a kind of a strange temporal Rubik's Cube type game. Right. If you're looking for a Call of Duty style shoot 'em up, this is not the game for you.
No, but there's no guns.
Myself. Yes. but they're not gratuitous, Shane.
No, they're not.
So Shane, anyway, right. So you're Rocket Ship Park Games, we're going to come to that. But you're originally from Waterford. You're now based in Canada, working with Rocket Ship Games. You are half of Rocket Ship Park Games. So kind of, let's just kind of go back to the beginning as to how did you get into games development in the first place?
Lovely. When I was a kid growing up in Slieveroo, just outside town, I got one Christmas when I was about 10 years old, I got a ZX Spectrum for Christmas. And that one event changed my entire life. So I was out in the middle of nowhere, in Slieveroo. There was significantly less houses there then than there is now, probably. And I hadn't got really access to a lot of games. We had that one store in town, I remember, Teleport, I think it was called.
Teleport Computers, yeah. And there was Finn's as well. Finn's Camera Shop, they used to sell some games.
I used to hang out there at lunchtime in school. After I was kicked out of the book centre, I used to go down there and hang out. We were there, I started to make games then. Because I couldn't really afford to buy them and I had lots of ideas. And the Spectrum came with an actual, computers these days don't come with stuff like this. It came with an actual book telling you how to code for this machine. And it had and the example programs in the book, they weren't like spreadsheets. They were like Breakout. There was games. So that opened up a whole world of making games. And I started that when I was about 10 and Jesus, I'm still doing it now. I'm still making games now. I did it all through my my teenage years and later on too.
What language would you have been programming there with the Spectrum? Was it BASIC? Would it have been something like that?
That was BASIC. And I did some machine code parts to speed things up because the Spectrum wasn't great at stuff like scrolling and things like that. So you'd mix in some machine code and feel like you're on the Matrix. And then later on, I coded in lots of different languages as I got older and whatnot. But I still have very fond memories of the Spectrum.
Mm. And did you studied computing in college, if I remember correctly, didn't you?
I did twice, yeah.
Twice.
I think it was a year. I did a certificate in commercial computing. I think I remember what it's called. You went into industrial or commercial, and I figured commercial. First, actually, I got into art college down the road, and I went into the open day in the art college because I figured I wanted to get into this making games and this artistic thing. So I went to the art college and they had an open day, and I remember strolling around the art college and looking around and thinking, Jesus, these aren't my people. there was no nerds there. They were all, I think Gott was in at the time, and it all looked kind of very full on. And then I went to the open day in Witt, And these are my people, who was full of nerds on computers and things. And, so I went there for, I finished the certificate there. And I think that was a year. And then I went off traveling the world for a bit. And I came back then for another 2 years and got the diploma, which I think was 3 years. I think the diploma was in commercial too, or it was, maybe it was, I think it was called commercial at the time as well. Mm. So I did two computer courses out in WIT over the years.
But I know you were working in other jobs, but you were always mm-hmm. tipping away on games at the same time.
I was, yeah.
Or games type applications and things like that. If I'm correct, the big game changer for you in terms of getting material published would have been the App Store and the first App Store on the iPhone. Would yeah. I be correct in that?
Yeah, it was a revelation. I was working in AOL at the time. I was a trainer in AOL, so like I taught new people how to troubleshoot stuff. And I don't know, one evening, I don't sleep that much. I sleep about four or five hours a night. So I'm always looking for stuff to do in the evening. So one evening, the SDK for the iPhone came out. So the first where you could actually make your own programs. So I downloaded it. And like I remember clicking the download button, that changed everything. I downloaded it and started making iPhone apps for fun. And they did pretty well. And it was like, it was a complete revelation. You could make something and you could publish it to the App Store. And somebody in Turkey or somebody in Oman, like they could download your game and you would get 70% or whatever it was. And that was like, because if you wanted to make a game before that, you know, you had to like burn it to disk and it had to be shipped out on containers and lorries around the world. You needed a publisher, gone. You could do it yourself. So that got to a stage where it was like, that was my nighttime and the day job was my daytime. And that was making like the same amount of money as the daytime. And AOL came to a stage where they were giving people redundancies. I think it's completely gone there now in town. So I just took the jump at that point. I took the redundancy and said, right, screw it, let's try this and see what happens until this money is gone. And that's where I went.
And you're still doing it today, so you must be doing something right. So you would be what is called an indie developer. Would I be correct in using that term? I'm not insulting you by saying that.
No, you can call me whatever you want. It's just a name. Yeah, you know. I guess I would be an indie developer, yeah. I'm certainly not any A's. I think I'm an indie developer.
Right. So I remember like in Waterford, I remember meeting you in the Waterford City Library and you'd be working away on your laptop in there developing games.
That was a good spot, yeah. You'd have to avoid the crazy people. Every now and then someone crazy would sit beside me and lean over and like point at the screen or something. But yeah, the library was a good spot.
But then you and your family moved to Canada.
Yeah.
And you're now... You formed Rocket Ship Park Games with your business partner is Jim Squires.
Yeah.
So, and he's, I assume he's Canadian because his Twitter handle is Jim Canuck.
He's definitely Canadian.
I'll take
Canadian.
It that's Canadian. Yeah. you've released Word Forward, Block Drop and Blitz. Mm-hmm. Could you maybe compare the difference between the Canadian games industry and the Irish games industry?
I'm not the best suited, but because I never was aware of an Irish games industry when I was in Ireland. I didn't like Jim helped me with this for sure. You meet some people in your life that like they're tent poles. You know, I have a few people, everybody has like five or six people they met in their life that caused them to go a different way. Unbeknownst to themselves, like they're just by being there at the right time. So in Ireland, when I coded, I was very individual. Like I didn't know any other game developers the whole time I lived in Ireland. Not even one. I never met a game developer. And certainly in Waterford, I didn't know of anybody or anything. So I wasn't aware of the industry. I didn't really need to be because I was only making iPhone games. So you could do that all yourself. And I was doing it all myself. And I was making contract games for people. Just via Twitter. I was just meeting him via Twitter. But then when I moved here and I met Jim, Jim is the opposite to me, the polar opposite to me. Jim is like very social and he's he'd talk to anybody, but he's really good at at meeting people and getting stuff arranged and applying for stuff. He's the business side of Rocketship Park. I'm the game side of Rocketship Park. So he dragged me into the game development scene in Canada. And I'm glad he did, because it's very vibrant here where I am. Around the Toronto area, there's so many games. A fair portion of the bigger indie games of the last couple of years have all originated from around here. That was a revelation for me, being part and being welcomed into this local game development scene over here.
I mean, Canada, it was actually funny enough, before we came on the podcast, I just said I'd look up some stats, and I didn't realize this, but the Canadian games industry is the third largest games industry for employment in the world after the United States and after Japan.
Yeah,
and there's, I was aware of, you know, the likes of your Ubisofts and BioWare would be big Canadian studio, obviously.
Yeah.
But as I started looking at all the indies, I went, okay, wow, there's actually so much going on here. I saw Super Brothers there, Freebird Games, who did To the Moon, which is sitting on my Switch playlist, waiting to be played, along with many other games. So that's another day's work. So it must feel good, though, to plug into an industry and an ecosystem like that.
Yeah,
I'd imagine it's quite supportive, or am I being naive in that?
No, it is. When I came here first, the first week I was in town, I was strolling around town and I met this chap in a local cafe, and I said hello to him. We got talking, and he was also like a game developer. So that was my first actual meeting game developer in my like 30 years of life or whatever. And he brought me down the road to where he used to work, and the building was still open and there was still some people there, and it was like a game studio that hired, that there was 100 people like working in there, and I knew the games, and I was like, I'm in a game studio. I'm standing in one. They do exist. Maybe I can do this. Maybe I haven't been toiling away like with no end in sight. And you're right, like it's very helpful. Like our game Love, like some of the art is done by local people in game studios here. We've hired some people to work on it. And, you know, we all share each other's tweets and go to each other's events. And before the apocalypse, there was like regular monthly meetups in a local town where about 20 indie gamers would meet up, and one of us would do a presentation about something, and then we just chat or play games.
Mm.
It was a very inclusive scene here.
That's brilliant. It's lovely to hear that. And actually, up until all of this happened with COVID, there has been something similar in Waterford. It's not specific to games, though. It's just developers in general. And there's tech meetups and once a month and that kind of stuff. And I've been to a few of them, and I do find them really exciting, even though I'm in it. I'm not strictly a developer. I'm kind of in that space, but I've also working in the education space.
Yeah.
It's nice to plug in and chat with people on a professional level, but also it's very relaxed. You know, if we talk about a particular technology, it's not because you feel like you're in a job interview or anything like that.
No.
You're just doing it because you're interested, and we're all geeks, I suppose, maybe.
Yeah, if I could change, like when I was younger, I would have gone to all of these, or I would have seeked out these things locally in town. I would have gone to Cork or Dublin or something to go to them, because God, they're tremendous. And when I'm talking, or when I meet young game developers here, I always tell them, like, just go to everything, and like it'll be hard the first few ones because, like say programmers, like generally aren't that social. Like some of them are, but like generally, you know, they're not that activists, or they're not like outward, but it'll get easier. And even if you don't like the first few, you'll really start to enjoy it, and you'll develop skills you won't learn in the classroom, like, you know, talking to people and showing them your game and being okay when they don't like this one little bit. It's just wonderful. Like it's one of the best things I ever did, was to get out there.
Okay, let's move on to Love, a puzzle box filled with stories. I nearly said full of stories again.
Oh, it's packed with them as well.
Yeah.
Stuffed with them also, yeah.
So Love came out there at the end of October. It's available on Steam.
Yeah.
I saw a lovely tweet last week where it was included in a little montage of for the Golden Joysticks of some people's favourite games of 2020. There was one guy in particular, a guy called James Jarvis, and he included that alongside The Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Which for you must be, that must be a great nod to get.
Oh yeah. Oh, they're all great. Like I was very happy. It made my day because when you're making something for a long time, at the end, my God, you're really not sure if it's good or not, you know, because you've been at it for so long. Any artistic endeavor, like, you just get blind to it. So it is really nice to see people, enjoying it or reacting in the way that I kind of wanted them to react, you know.
Yeah, so I'm looking at some of the reviews here. A review here from Screen Rant. Lovebox, puzzle filled with stories, combined storytelling and complex puzzle with minimalist design to bring puzzle games to a new level. Eurogamer, have a unique and gently profound observation on life. It's a warm but brief puzzle game about playing with time and fate and people's lives. There's a lovely review from PC Gamer. It was singled out from TheEnemy.com as an indie game gem of the week. They had particular nice notices about the music. So we'll get to that.
I want to talk about, because it's hard to talk about love. So there's a way, I made games for a long, long time, that did okay, that just barely trucked along. And one time about 10 years ago, I changed how I make games. And, that day everything changed. The game started to do better. People started to, enjoy them more, and it made me have time to make them more. And it was just a little thing. Every single game I make now has based around a single feeling, one feeling. So if I was making a puzzle game, like I picked a feeling, which was calm, and every single thing about that game had to be calm. Like the font was calm. If it was a phone game, I used a system font. So if you got an email and you pop back to the game, the font was the same. Nothing takes you away. The music was all in the same key. There's water. Like 100 things combined to be calm. And that really worked. So since then, every game I've made has been one single feeling. And love is actually not about love. Love is about sadness. There's a corner of sadness which is kind of warm and nice. It's why you sit on a couch with your wife or your significant other and watch a sad movie, and it's kind of nice. That's the feeling that I was chasing with love. And that's why it's so awesome when I see a review or hear a review and somebody felt like that. It means I did my job. But love was a hard one, because that was a hard feeling to capture.
Okay, so I can totally see where you're coming from with the motivation of the emotion in the game. And actually, I was going to ask you about that later on, but you've answered it for me. I was going to say love. There's a lot about regret in the game.
There is.
But anyway, that's another day's work. Okay, could you describe the game's mechanic for somebody who hasn't played it?
Yeah. Most people know what a Rubik's Cube is, but I have met people who don't. But so if you imagine a Rubik's Cube, but the cube, instead of being a cube, is a block of flats or apartments. And there's people living in each one of those apartments. And each one of those people has a little love puzzle attached to them. And you can turn those apartments just like you can turn your Rubik's Cube around. Half your Rubik's Cube is in the past and half your Rubik's Cube is in the present. So if little Jim is sitting in the past in his window looking out, and you turn little Jim's floor around, little Jim will be sitting in the window and he'll be 40. And it's that kind of logic puzzle. Stuff is related and you pass things through time to solve people's stories or puzzles.
And it's all done through photographs and a photograph album. You have to match up past and present photographs to, I suppose, complete the telling of the story.
Yeah, you...
Would that be correct?
Yeah, you solve the puzzle by taking photos, Polaroids, at specific times. The game hasn't got any words in it on purpose, like, because we're trying to tell these stories and solve these puzzles, but I don't want to tell you what's happening, because if I tell you what's happening, it's my story. Like, if the story is about someone who lost, like a grandfather or something, or someone who, if the love story is about, like, family, it can't be my family or my story. It has to be what you interpret by playing the game. So that's why it's got no words. And that's why you're taking pictures, because you draw your own conclusions. And that's why the art style isn't photorealistic, it's kind of canvassy. Because, you know, if you solve the puzzle and you think it was about something which it wasn't and it made you sad, then I'm okay with that. It means I've done my job. That's fine. So that's why you're taking pictures, and that's why you're solving via pictures, because I want you to interpret it yourself.
So it's a temporal puzzle story, some in the past, some in the present, and you have to switch between the past and the present in order to tell the stories for these characters who live in the apartment building, in the apartment in the building, and that allows you to, I suppose, complete the game. It has a very interesting aesthetic and an interesting art style. And you've touched on it, and you mentioned that you got some local Canadian artists to assist you with it. It is quite unique. It does have that kind of pastel quality. You can see kind of faces, but you can project anything you want onto it. Like, or you might notice, like, there's one character, he's wearing the red hat, and you spot him later on when he's older because he's still wearing the red hat or whatever. How did you arrive at that art style? Was that something that you brought to the artist, or they brought to you, and then you developed your game around that? How did that work?
It's something,
or maybe something else entirely.
No, it's something that I did, but it took a long time. We're talking about years. The idea for Love has been around for maybe 8 or 9 years, and I just couldn't do it justice. I couldn't figure out a way to do it justice. There's many iterations of it, which had words and had different music. Tom Waits was a soundtrack at one point, which I definitely couldn't afford. And there was many different art styles that just weren't doing it. But the art style that I came up with, it came from just realizing that I can't be too exact about this stuff. I need to affect people. I need them to do all the interpretation themselves. And also, it came out because of real world reasons. Because if I adopt that very kind of painterly, like low poly art style, it means I can afford to make the game. Because, you know, I can't afford to have like real life, you know, graphics of people rumbling around. So it suited all that. It all kind of worked, and it all kind of came together, thankfully, around about the right time. When I had to, you know, decide on the final art style. So I'm pleased with how it turned out artistically, for sure. But it took a long time to get there.
So for each of the individual characters, and they are very much individual characters, and I'm not just blowing smoke up your arse by saying that, they're very recognisable. So did you come up with the character models, or did you go to some of these artists who you worked with and said, look, I need an old man, I need a man who's middle aged and old, or I need somebody who's a boy and a man. I need a woman and a girl. Yep. This is the general aesthetic. Go nuts.
Yeah, we did. We knew who we needed, and we knew their stories. Some of them, I was able to. I had some assets that I got from the Unity asset store, which are almost right. So some of them we just needed to change some heads. And some of them we needed to create from scratch. So I did. I would go to the artist and say, you know, we need like a 14-year-old girl. And we also need that same girl when she's, you know, 40-something years old. And she has to have something identifiable on her between those two times. All the stuff in the past is black and white, except identifiable items. So there's only splashes of color in the past if it's that item. So you can tell that, okay, that's the hat. Like, you know, it's the hat.
Yeah.
There's the hat again in the future. So it was us going to the artist and saying, okay, we'd like these people, please.
Couple that then with the music. Right, because the music I quite enjoyed it. From playing the game, and now I would like the music. The music is done by a Waterford-based musician, Neil White, who you would have played in the band with 100,000 years ago.
Millions of years ago,
back in the dinosaur ages.
Yeah.
Right, so Neil would be, I would not associate Neil with video games at all. I'd associate him with music and coffee because he runs Arch Coffee in Waterford City.
He does, yeah.
And I know Neil from donkey's years, just like yourself, from music and school and blah, 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 and all that stuff, right? So how did you convince Neil, who I don't think I'll be insulting him by saying he can be cantankerous. He can be set in his ways. He likes to do things a certain way, which is absolutely fine, and it's working out well for him.
Yeah, I think so.
How did you say to him, right, Neil, I want you to do some music, but it must fit in with this form so that it will fit in with the game. You can't just do whatever you want. How did that go down?
Well, I think me and Neil are very close. Neil was the best man at my wedding a long, long time ago. I was married 20 years ago. Well, I'm still married, I should clarify. But and I think it's benefited me well in my personal, in my work life. I have a fluky talent for getting on with cantankerous people. And you're not wrong that that Neil and me can be cantankerous at times. But the game actually came from the song. When I think Neil released an album over 10 years ago called Something Headlight. It's on my phone.
I know the one you're talking about, and if I should have the name in front of me, but I don't. But well, I know the one you're talking about.
I should certainly have it in front of me. Here we go. Caught in the Headlights.
Yeah.
And there was a song on that album called Devils in My Head, which is the key song in the game.
Yeah.
The game actually came from that song. The game came from me listening to that song whenever it was released, like many years ago. And thinking at the same time as listening to that song and thinking how good a song it was, I should do something with this. This song makes me feel kind of sad, but in a nice way. And I have this idea for a puzzle game, and I've just finished this game where I wanted people to feel annoyed. Actually, it wasn't the game I was making. So let's do a sad game. It all actually came from that song, and it wasn't hard. I didn't have to convince Neil. Could I use stuff? He's very open to me. He was very open to me using the music. I had to make him take the money, to license the music. He could not have been better. He sent me alternative versions of tracks, yeah. So I could use instrumental versions also. And we have a soundtrack for the game as well, which all the money for that will go right to Neil. And a lot of the actual comments on the internet, people do like the music. And I'm a firm believer that if you want to make anybody feel any way at all, the quickest way to do so and the most effective way to do so is via music. The music is like the road to the heart. Like the other games I was making, feeling different ways, the stuff I spent the most money on was always the music. So if I made a puzzle game, which seemed innocuous, the music, I think we spent $5,000 on the music for a simple puzzle game. But I think that's why you felt relaxed while playing the puzzle game. So it wasn't difficult to sort the music out. And I don't think the game would be near as good if it didn't have that soundtrack, for sure. I'm sure of that.
The devil's in my head, I fight them all the time. The ones that I don't know keep me up at night. Wrote a little note so I'd remember why I swore I'd never go and fall into your eyes.
The art style, as in the visual art style and the audio style, they're quite sympathetic. They're both very analog, is probably the wrong word, but they're both folksy is even the wrong word because that makes it sound cheap. It's not cheap. It's characterful.
Thoughtful,
maybe that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
But there's a lovely picky style on the guitar. Every now and again, he comes in with some lovely reverb drenched guitar. The strings, it's very affecting, and as you're playing the game and this music is looping around in the background, it doesn't wear out its welcome. Certainly that's what I found anyway. And that must be a very difficult thing when you're trying to do music for a game. You don't want it to wear out its welcome.
Yeah, it is very difficult. And making it, timing it, timing the music so it, you know, comes up a little bit when you just do something, you know, I want to edge you towards like feeling a certain way if you've just almost solved the puzzle, or if you just revealed the puzzle, and that's tricky, you know, based on where you are in the song and whatnot. So that was tricky, but it just, I think the music works so well because it all came from the music. And I'm a very musical person. Like a day doesn't go by when I don't like listen to a load of music or force my children to listen to some new songs that I think they should listen to. I'm that kind of dad.
Do you still play guitar?
I do. I have one beside me here now, but I wouldn't say I don't play as much as I used to play or anything. But I can still play guitar, and my one of my children is very musical too. So music is a big deal in this house.
Were you ever tempted to do the music yourself?
No, God, no. I would not have done near as good a job as Neil did. And to be honest, a big learning for me and this game was that how better a game you can make if you don't do it all yourself. You know, it's like if you just let it go, let the music go to Neil. I'll let the some character design go to some other artist whose job it is to do that. So yeah, no, I wasn't tempted to do it myself at all.
Let's talk about development tools. What tools did you use to develop the game? I think you mentioned Unity. Was it all done in Unity?
It was. This game was all coded in Unity. This was my second Unity game. So for decades, I just made my own engines. And coded, which was dumb. Anybody who's listening to this, don't do that. Don't be that guy. I wish I had of coded in Unity or learned Unity sooner. So if you're learning Unity in college, way to go, or even Unreal, whatever it is, let somebody else make the engine, guys. This game is completely made in Unity, which leaves it open to other platforms. It makes it possible to port to other platforms. Whereas previously, before Unity, my games weren't, it wasn't possible to bring them to other devices.
Go on.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm just saying the other tools, art-wise, is just art-wise, I just use like Pixelmator is the app I use on my Mac to do all my art. And I use GarageBand if I ever need to do some silly music stuff. But no, I don't have to do much music stuff, really.
So, and inside Unity then, what kind of scripting languages are you using inside that?
I use C# in Unity that's it, just C# scripts, loads of scripts. I don't do anything out of the box in Unity. I guess the shader is probably the most complicated thing, the shader which separates the past and the present in the building. That was the most complex thing, and some of the post-processing effects to make it look like a painting. Were pretty complex, so much so that I'm never going to touch them again because I might break them. Nothing. I didn't do anything crazy in Unity. Some of my next projects, I'll stretch my Unity chops a bit more. I think this is a pretty kind of simple contained game because I knew it had to be simple and contained because I want to bring it to other platforms. I want to maybe bring it to like VR or consoles soon. So it couldn't be that complex. And it's going to land on phones eventually too. So keep it down, keep the scope down.
And if I can just delve into some of the mechanics of it a little bit more. So you're talking about the shader. So this is in the part of the game, Love, a puzzle box filled with stories, where the apartments in the apartment block are in the past and the present. In the present, they're full of colour. In the past, they're in a kind of a sepia tone.
Yeah.
You know, kind of monochromatic kind of style. Are you saying it was the same asset, but you're applying a shader to pull the color out of it in the past? Is it?
Not exactly. That's what I did. Well, originally, before, I had a load of if-thens. You know, if it's in the past, do this. If it's in the present, do that. Which worked for like early demos and prototypes. But that wasn't going to mash, really, when you consider there's like hundreds of objects in a full game. So I needed a way to change the way stuff looked. So the first thing I did was what you just said, is I changed like the color schemes and whatnot and changed the materials so they looked like they're in the past or present. But the one that shipped was a lot better. The one that shipped, there's actually two versions of each single room. So there's two blocks, and one block is your past block, and one block is your present block, or apartment block, whatever we say. And all the shader does is decide which parts to show and when. So that means that you can show a third of a block or a fifth of a block, and you can move the floor really slowly and start to really see when stuff is shown and when and disappears. So the shader does all the hard work.
Okay, so if I'm picking you up correctly, the past and the present version of the apartment are both there,
yep.
But depending on what way you're rotating it, certain parts of it are shown or not shown.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep. And it means you can, it means it became a lot more tactile when it wasn't like a binary, if then show this apartment or show this apartment. The way it is now, it means you can turn the floor really slowly and you can see the apartment change right before your eyes as you do it. So that was a big learning experience, and for me, for sure, coming from like other stuff altogether. But I'm really pleased with Unity. I think a lot of I see a lot of like bad stuff about Unity sometimes in among developers and whatnot. But I can't understand it, like, because I've been at this for years and years, and I remember when it took like 20 minutes to compile a program. Do you know? My assignments when I was in college, you know, I'd print them out onto a freaking like a paper thing. You know what I mean? So to me, like having a button that says, you know, there's a button in Unity that says, you know, build for Switch or something like that, you know, or build for iOS. It's a freaking button, Rob. It's not that simple, but like the engines we have available to us nowadays as programmers, it's just astounding. And Unity is, you know, you can use it for free. You can publish a game for free in Unity. We would have spent millions on that engine years ago to the rights to the engine. We would have bought the Unreal Engine for like $10 million or something to make our game, you know?
Yeah. So Shane, you've kind of already given yourself a little bit of advice, your younger self a bit of advice, which was don't build game engines yourself. Although I'm sure you probably learned plenty of lessons along the way. You mightn't be the developer that you are today if you hadn't done that. But if you could, game engines aside, if you could give your younger self a bit of advice about developing games or the career path that you've taken, what would it be?
Yeah, if I could give my younger self advice, I'd say a couple of things. One thing I've touched on is I'd say talk to people, go get involved in those little groups, wherever they are. You will be glad you did. And it'll be quite a revelation when you meet people who like the stuff that you like. And it's not that difficult to talk about the stuff that you like. You know, it will come out. It won't be that hard. It'll be fine. And other advice, I've mentioned that don't build your own engines, but kind of attached to that is like a really common thing that I see with kids these days is, you know, like finish something, you know, like, have something you can show me or show somebody that has like a menu, start menu, you know, and it has like a pause button, and I can download it and I can run it. And if that's just a tiny little thing that works, if it's like a one level of your idea that works, then that is worth so much more and tells me so much more than 1,000 ideas you have that never were finished. Like, it's a skill to finish. And all the best, like all the most successful and all the best and all the happiest game developers out there are people who like finish things. It's a skill. Like, it's not easy, but you start by just finishing small little things. And if you have, you know, it's human to want to add things to a project or want to do more stuff. And I still do that all the time. But if you get good at finishing stuff, then you can do it then. You know, you just put it aside and you put it in the next thing. That's the biggest thing that I've learned over the years. And that's why I'm still able to do this, I think, is because I've shipped like stuff and some of it was pretty crap. But, you know, the next thing was better and I didn't end up lingering on that thing for a year.
Isn't that the discipline, though, and the professionalism, Shane? We've all had, and you could say that for music or art or anything.
All art,
you can say for anything. You know, it's somebody who finishes something.
But you can teach people, though. I think it's a skill you can learn. I think everybody can learn that skill. And you see it in kids, like in kids, you see kids who have like amazing brains for game design, and you can see them in front of you and they have, oh, they're bursting with these ideas. And if just impart like the Matrix, that skill in this chap or this girl's head, by God, they're going to be good, you know? You can completely learn it. It's not like, it's not something that somebody can't do. You can teach them to do it for sure.
You're showing your age there by invoking the Matrix as a reference, because anyone under the age of 20 won't recognize that because it's over 20 years old, but that's another day's work.
It is.
What's next for Rocket Ship Park Games? Will you take, so you mentioned like, okay, Love of a Puzzle Box filled with stories might be appearing on other platforms. It's available on Steam now for PC and Mac. You're saying that you're looking at other platforms for that?
Looking at other platforms for that. And after that, I guess I'll make another game. It's kind of what I do. I don't want to ever stop making games. When I wake up in the morning, I think about like the game I'm making now, and I go to bed at night, I'm usually, the last thing I think about is usually something to do with a game. I don't play a lot of games. I play like a fair amount of games, but I think the greatest game of all is making games. Like I wish more people could do this. Like, it's fantastic. It's like, you play a lot of music. I presume you still play a lot of music. Like, you know, it's great to listen to music, but I think it's almost better when you write a top tune or just playing your guitar. I can't see myself ever doing anything else, Rob. I do a fair bit of like there's local colleges here, and I taught some game design there. And I could see myself maybe doing that in addition to making games later, because it's something I like to talk about. And I love to see like the kids like getting better and creating stuff. It's amazing. So that's what's next. More games, Rob. More games.
More games. More games. If somebody wants to find out about Rocket Ship Park, is there anywhere you'd recommend they go?
Yeah, I recommend they go to Rocket Ship Park is on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. EG Vroom is my name on Twitter. It's not very on brand. It's just EG because I used to do stuff for Eurogamer. And Vroom is because I love to drive cars and games. I'm active on Twitter and rockjapark.com and thatlovegame.com. They're all places you can find us.
Any idea when the game Love might be available on the other consoles, or is that an industry secret?
I do, but I can't tell you.
Okay.
I would be shot. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. Well, listen, Shane, thank you so much for chatting today. Thanks for giving us an insight into the development process of Love, a Puzzle Box filled with stories. We wish you all the best with Rocket Ship Park Games. And next time you're back in Waterford or back in Ireland, do drop us a line. We might sit down and have a cup of coffee or pint or something like that. And maybe we can even go down to Neil's place, his coffee shop in town, and, you know, just hurl abuse at him or something like that.
That sounds good. We'll go down to Neil, we'll hurl abuse at him, and then we'll go down to Downs's, sit in the corner.
Good thinking.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rob. It's been an absolute pleasure and fun.
You're a gentleman, Shane. Thank you so much.
Thanks.